Welcome to the Sunday Special on the Scope of Practice podcast, where we take a break from the hustle and grind of business and talk to real healthcare professionals about how their faith in God shapes their clinical practice. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast. I'm excited to bring you the 10th installment of the Sunday Special today. If you're a new listener to the podcast, the Sunday Special is a completely separate concept from the regular weekly Monday episodes. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to the previous Sunday Special episodes, let me explain what this is all about. On the first Sunday of each month, I feature a special episode where I interview a Christian physician about their faith in God, their personal spiritual journey, and how their faith has influenced their career. If you're looking for the regular episodes where we talk about strategies and resources to help you manage your business more successfully and master your personal finances, those episodes come out on Monday mornings, so you can join me again tomorrow. Now, before we launch into this episode, I'll say as I always do that I'm a Christian. My faith in Jesus is a very important part of my life, but I know that not everybody that's listening to the podcast shares my faith, and that's okay. Anyone of any faith is welcome here. And if this isn't something you're interested in, no worries. Feel free to delete this episode, but make sure you join us tomorrow for an awesome episode on how to grow your practice by attracting more patients using very simple techniques. No need to leave a hateful review or negative comment. Just delete this episode and join me tomorrow. We'd love to have you for anything you want to be a part of. Now, if you are staying to hear this episode, you are going to be so encouraged and so empowered by this conversation. Normalizing the Christian faith within the practice of medicine is something that I think we should be doing more. And I really hope that these discussions embolden you to be more open with sharing your own faith. Let me encourage you, by the way, to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already done that, because I don't want you to miss out on any of the upcoming episodes. And also make sure you stay tuned to the end of the show and you'll hear about the free resources that I'm giving away to help inspire you on your daily walk with God. Today's Bible verse is 2 Timothy 1:7. For the Spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline. If we look to Jesus as a model of leadership, we're instantly struck by his courage. He has so many opportunities to backpedal or recant, but he presses on toward his goal. The same Spirit that strengthened Jesus strengthens us. And when we learn to lean into that strength, our leadership abides in his power, love, and self-discipline. The sponsor for this episode is MedEvolve. MedEvolve can give you insights into your practice's financial performance and outcomes like never before. Get answers to important revenue questions such as, where am I losing money and why? What is the value of my AR? When will I get paid? How many claims have not worked? When you start to think about the level of transparency you have into how your accounts receivable is being worked, that's directly proportional to your net revenue and keeping a healthy balance sheet. The right analytics solution will tell a story that's easy to understand. MedEvolve Power Analytics gives you the answers that allow you to take action. Start making healthcare business decisions based on data. Learn how they're helping physician practices reduce their cost to collect and increase efficiency with data-driven technology. Now, to have this great company help you work smarter, reduce your cost to collect, and get paid on time, you can find them at drpodcastnetwork.com/MedEvolve. That's drpodcastnetwork.com/MedEvolve. Well, I'm really pumped about today's episode, you guys. I feel like it's wrong to have favorite podcast episodes, like, you know, you shouldn't have favorite kids, but I'll just say that this is one of the most inspiring conversations that I've had on the Sunday Special yet. Dr. K.K. Moody is an emergency medicine physician who's had to overcome a lot of serious challenges. She's battled hospital administrators who are making it harder for her to care for her patients. She's battled leaders who wanted her to stay quiet instead of speaking out against bad practices. And she's dealt with people who said that she would never be taken seriously because she's a woman. Well, let me tell you, this conversation inspired me. And I hope it does for you too. I really want this discussion to give you courage. If she can take a stand, then we all can. God does not give us a spirit of timidity, but rather a spirit of power and love. And Dr. Moody has that in spades, and I really think you're going to be inspired by her interview. So here is my conversation with Dr. K.K. Moody. Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Sunday Special on the Scope of Practice podcast. My guest this week is Dr. K.K. Moody. Dr. Moody, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
Oh my gosh. I got to tell you, I am so pumped that we finally have you on. So I don't know how many times we have rescheduled this, but it's, you know, I think we're on our sixth or eighth iteration.
Yes, something.
And my only assumption here is that there must be something really important that the enemy wants us to not share, because otherwise, why would they be going to such great lengths to keep this from happening?
My thoughts exactly. And today I was like, you know what? This is happening no matter what. It is happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, between, you know, job stuff and family stuff and Snowmageddon here in Texas, yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, oh my goodness gracious. But
well, we had Snowmageddon here and then Snowmageddon there, and it was delayed. So it delayed us twice, just the snow in different times in different places.
Yeah. So, but we're here, we got it, and we're doing this. It's going to be good. It's going to be a good time. Well, one of the ways that I always like to start this off with folks is to just explain to the folks listening, maybe folks that are listening to the Sunday special for the first time, they've been regular listeners of the weekly Monday episodes on business and personal finance, is just, you know, explain that this is a unique opportunity for us. This is a chance for us to take a break from all the hustle and bustle and, you know, let's figure out our careers and let's talk about money and say, okay, you know what? Let's just stop. Let's take a rest and let's talk about something that's really, really important. And so I always like to give folks an opportunity to share the role that their own faith is in Jesus has played in their careers and in their lives. So can you tell us, maybe just for starters, how did you come to accept Jesus as your savior?
Well, first of all, I have to say that when you asked me to talk about this, I was really floored, and I said, remember, I'm not the one to talk about this. I'm so flawed and not perfect and, you know, known to, you know, get angry and frustrated and all the imperfections. I'm not real churchy. I don't go to church and, you know, but I have God there as my spiritual guide always. And so I was really quite floored when you asked me to even do this, just because I felt like I was not the right person. But maybe we all feel that way, right? We're all imposter syndrome with that. But so I guess I was probably 9 years old, I guess, when I got baptized. And my uncle was a preacher, and my grandparents always took us to church. And it was just really fun because my grandmother was kind of fun to go to church with. She would spray us all with cologne and spank the boys, and it was just a lot of fun to go with her. It was a treat. And but as I went, I started kind of hearing instead of just fiddling in the seat. I started to actually, as a 9 year old, start to hear what they were saying, and it started to resonate with me. And so at one point I asked my mom if I could get baptized, and she said, well, of course. And we had this long conversation, and she ultimately said, it's your choice, and I'll support you, whatever you decide. And so we started making the plans, and I was going to a church at that time where they dunk. So that was a little bit scary for a 9 year old to be dunked in the water in front of the whole crowd. But then, you know, right after it happened, I thought, oh gosh, now I have to be something different. I have to be a different person. But in reality, I didn't. But I started asking more questions and more questions and more questions, like, oh no, what if I say a bad word, or what if this, or what if that? And so it was at a young age, kind of working through all of the things that I still work through. So just like I doubted myself when you asked me to come on this podcast, what if I do it wrong? What if I'm not a good enough person to do this?
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that feeling of inadequacy. And I think it's really good for people to hear that. I think we all feel those same feelings at times in our lives. I think we all feel like we're inadequate, like we're not good enough. And I think we also feel like we're the only one who feels that way. You know, we must be unique in that. But we know that's a lie. We know that's just the devil whispering in our ear saying, you're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. And yeah, we know that that's just a lie. And I take comfort, I think, from the realization that if you look throughout the Bible, God called the most horrible, sinful, broken people in all the world. I mean, you think about, you know, when he led the Israelites to the promised land, you know, their salvation was a prostitute. Mm-hmm. You know, he called tax collectors, he called fishermen. I mean, people who were considered the lowest and the worst of society.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am an emergency medicine doctor. I mean, we're kind of, so
you can relate.
I'm kidding. We're awesome. But, you know, sometimes we're treated like we're the lowest.
but you know, we all, I think, feel that way. And yet God, we know that God can use imperfect people to accomplish his perfect will.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. And the more I thought about it, the more, it was kind of terrifying, but at the same time, I really, of all the podcasts that I've done, I found myself really looking forward to this conversation, and I have no idea where this is going to go. And it's kind of scary and vulnerable in a big way, but I don't know. I was drawn to your invitation. So here we are.
Well, I think it's great that you're coming on, and I hope it inspires other people to do the same and maybe to start having some of these conversations and feel like it's okay to talk about these kinds of things. I think we've gotten to a place in our society where these subjects are often considered taboo or almost off limits. And I think some of that is societally imposed, and I think a lot of it is self-imposed. You know, we don't want to rock the boat. You know, what are other people going to think of us? You know, what if we say the wrong thing, like you said? But I think it just comes down to doing what you're doing, which is stepping out in faith and just saying, you know, God, speak through me. I am an inadequate, imperfect vessel, and use me as you can.
Yeah. And certainly I feel like the thing that I don't really outwardly talk about it very much, because I don't want to step on anyone's toes. Everyone kind of has their different thoughts and beliefs, and I don't want to impose my spirituality on someone else, but I do want to live by example and sort of be there and be the peacemaker. And if someone notices that I wear a cross, okay, they notice it, but it's not ever, I never want it to be pushy or an imposition on anyone. But if someone ever asks me truly what gets you out of bed and what keeps you sane and what is your guide, the light comes from God. I mean, it's not my light. I pray every time I go into a shift, thy will be done, and guide my hands and guide my heart. And, you know, somehow I make it through each shift.
Do you feel like that's a really important, I hesitate to use the word ritual, but a really important custom for you to pray at the beginning of every shift? Does that just kind of help you center and put your perspective back where it belongs?
Oh, without a doubt. It is absolutely what kept me completely centered every shift, every single time from the beginning. I would, and still do, as I pull into the parking lot, as I'm gathering my things. You know, I'm not on my knees. Clearly, I'm behind the steering wheel of a car, but I say the Lord's Prayer every single time I pull up to the hospital parking lot. And then as I'm walking in, I ask God to guide my heart and guide my mind and help me access the information that I've shoved into my head over the years. Because, you know, sometimes we can forget things, but I ask for guidance to be able to access the information that I need to use to help his people and to guide my hands and to help me with the staff too, because shifts can get really hard and they can get very morally injurious to everyone involved. And so it's not that I'm just praying for the patients. I am, of course, but I'm also praying that I can be the light for the staff that's stressed out as well.
Well, and as an emergency medicine physician, I imagine that having that strength to continue on during a shift is just critical and probably has to be renewed periodically throughout the shift. I mean, after you've seen your third overdose and your fourth trauma victim and your seventh heart attack and your third kid who doesn't deserve to have the respiratory issues that he has, and it's just tragedy upon tragedy upon tragedy, it becomes exhausting. It's emotionally overwhelming. And so I imagine that you're reminded on a fairly regular basis that you need the strength of someone greater to lean on.
But you know what? I am reminded with that next patient, that next cheerful 2-year-old that smiles at me, or that next 90-year-old that squeezes my hand and says, thank you.
Well, that's really wonderful. Well, so I want to shift gears for a second and talk a little bit about some of your struggles that you've had to deal with. You've had to overcome a lot over the years. We've been talking about this for a little while, you and I, but I would love for you to share with our audience some of the more specific struggles that you've really had, especially some of the challenges you've had in talking with and really standing up to leadership about issues and really in a high stakes game of having to really put it all on the line. Can you share a little bit about some of your experiences?
There have been times in my career that have been better than others. There have been times when I've been in situations that were more supportive than others. Some hospitals, some leadership is more supportive than others. And occasionally we as physicians work in places that administration is not as supportive as other places. I have been blessed and am currently blessed to be working in a place where I feel very supported by the administration and by my colleagues. There have been times in my training when I was told that I would never be taken seriously in medicine because I was, and I quote, blonde, petite, attractive, and too nice. And then when I reflected on that, I realized that not one of those things was constructive. Not one of those things was anything I could control. Not one of those things was having anything to do with practicing medicine. And this was someone in leadership and in great power over me. There have been other times when I've had concerns for not having the tools and the staff that I needed to take adequate care of patients. And I don't want to say when and where that was, certainly, but I have brought it to the attention of decision makers and have been told to stop talking about it. And when I didn't stop talking about it, I was told a little bit more strongly to stop talking about it. And I have been told that I could be taken off the schedule if I didn't stop talking about certain issues that had to do with patient safety. And again, I'm not saying which hospital or where or when, but it has happened. And I knew that I would be putting myself in harm's way to continue to talk about patient safety issues. But I felt compelled to continue because my patients depended on me to be their voice and to speak up and to do the right thing, even if it meant I would be fired.
Well, and that's an incredibly sobering thought. I mean, it's all well and good for us to have principles and say, you know, I know what I would do in this situation, and I would definitely do this and this. I can't believe this other person didn't do this other thing in this situation. But when our feet are held to the fire, and all of a sudden it's more than just theory on the line, all of a sudden it's my job, which means it's my livelihood, which means it's my ability to provide for my kids, which means it's my ability to make sure that my family is able to continue living in the house that we're in, and my kids can keep going to the same school. When you start putting real consequences on these things, all of a sudden it changes in a big way. So staring that in the face and left with the decision of, okay, either I just shut up and take it and know that I didn't stand up for my patients, or I take a stand and potentially put everything on the line. I mean, what's going through your mind in that situation? I mean, how do you wrestle that to the ground?
Physicians across the country are facing this. It is not unique to any one of us. There are many, many physicians across the country that are being told to be quiet and live up to the metrics. It's like we're in the matrix. Physicians across the country are being told to live up to the metrics. Make sure you get a certain Prescani score. Make sure your door-to-doc time is within a certain time frame. Make sure that everyone is happy. Make sure that all of the metrics are met, because that's the way the hospitals get paid. But those things go against being able to hold that 90-year-old's hand and being able to spend the time with that 2-year-old so that they allow me to look in their ears. Those human connections are why we go into medicine, many of us, to be able to actually comfort our patients. Oftentimes, comforting the patient is the biggest thing you'll do on their visit. Maybe they don't even need medicine. Maybe they need reassurance. That being said, the way that we all have to find the courage to stand up for what we would do in theory, we have to bring those things into reality. We have to dig deeper into what our core beliefs really are. Why are we doctors? Why are we doctors? Why were we led to medicine in the first place? What did we write on our essays when we applied to medical school? Most of us probably wrote something about wanting to help people. Were we kidding? Were we just trying to get in, or did we mean it? We have to dig a little deeper and truly examine when we are held to the fire and our feet are held to the flame, and we have to make a choice to just put our head down and be quiet and suffer the moral injury of what we see happening all around us that shouldn't happen. Or we have to stand up and put ourselves in harm's way and have the courage to do the right thing. We have to dig deeper into our core values, and we have to pray for guidance. We have to find those reasons to go forward. And we have to know that our efforts are for the right reasons. And then we can sleep at night, with whether we get fired or not. But it's so hard for doctors, because most of us have enormous student loans. We come out with $300,000-$400,000 in debt. And that is a huge albatross around our neck. And many of us are the only breadwinners in the family. We may have a stay-at-home mom, stay-at-home dad, or a spouse that doesn't earn as much as we do, or we're single mom, single dad. Either way, we have to pay back those student loans, and we have to pay our mortgages, and we have to think about putting our children through college. And when are we going to even get retirement funds? After all those things, it's all kind of already spoken for. And so oftentimes fear comes into our hearts. Fear is a liar, you know, but fear comes into our hearts and tells us that we are not capable enough, we are not strong enough, we are not courageous enough. And anyway, why are we going to throw ourselves under the bus? Because we're never going to make a difference anyway. This is what the doubt starts creeping in. Why would I put myself in harm's way when it won't even make a difference anyway? And then my career is crushed and nobody's listening anyway. And then I'll be made an example of and thrown under the bus, and my life is over. And then what happens to my kids? What happens to my mortgage? What happens to my student loans? So that fear is a liar. We have to pull from within and know in our hearts that God will guide us. We feel these urges to make things better and to follow our conscience for a reason. Maybe that's why we were even in medical school in the first place. Maybe it was this battle. Maybe it's this very battle that is the reason we're even doctors in the first place.
Oh, it's like the line in Esther when Mordecai is talking to Esther and he says, "Perhaps you were made for such a time as this."
I have that on my wall.
Yeah. So she's asking, how can I do this? If I go to the king and he doesn't recognize me, my life will be forfeit. And he said, maybe God made you for such a time as this. And, you know, as physicians, there are going to be times when we have to stand up. Maybe it's standing up to a patient's family member who wants us to do something that's not in the patient's best interest. Maybe it's standing up to a colleague who wants to do something maybe it's standing up to someone and having the courage to say, listen, you're hungover. You're not in any shape to do your shift today. Or maybe it's someone who's really not qualified to do a procedure that they're about to do. And you say, look, you're not, let me help you. You're not ready for this. Or maybe it's like you said, standing up to your administrators and saying, look, you guys are making it harder for us to take care of our patients safely. We got to do something different. So how important is it to you to have your faith to fall back on in those kinds of challenging times?
Well, it's not one of the important things. It is the most important thing. I feel like if I didn't have this really core belief system and this true guidance that I can tap into the strength of the Spirit, I don't think I could do this alone. I'm not strong enough to do this without prayer and without being able to fight on my knees. You know, I get down and I ask for the guidance and I come up from prayer knowing, not just thinking, but knowing that I'm doing the right thing and to keep going. And it gives me the strength to take a breath, go again.
Yeah. And I like the concept that I can't remember where I read this, but it's been a long time, but says, God does not call us to be fearless. God calls us to be courageous.
Exactly.
And he doesn't call us to be without fear. He calls us to face our fears, look Absolutely. Them in the eye, and choose to overcome them.
Oh yeah. I've been terrified. There have been times in my career that I have been absolutely terrified. But I feel like the definition of courage is feeling all that fear, but believing so truly in what you're doing that you do it anyway.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes of all time is from Augustine. He said, "We become brave by doing brave things."
Yeah,
we're not inherently born brave. Most people, you become brave by constantly choosing to look past and to overcome your fears.
Oh, and it is so true.
That requires, like you said, that requires a lot of times just stepping out in faith and just saying, you know, I don't know that I can do this, but I'm going to do it. And you just decide.
And, you know, so much truth in what you just said, honestly, because over the years I've become more courageous. As a young woman, I was way less courageous. The fear would overtake me and I would back down on things that I could have done differently. But I definitely have built courage over the years, because when I'm facing something that's terrifying again, I dig deep and I go back in my memory banks and I remember times of things that seemed absolutely impossible to overcome. Absolutely impossible. Like, some people would not even believe some of the things. And I made it through, just like you, just like all of us. We all have stories of overcoming adversity, whether we tell those stories or not. But I think the secret is, what we have to do is use those times of being afraid and overcoming it, overcoming with courage and standing up for our beliefs and not dying. I think we have to remember each time that happens, it builds us up a little bit more. It polishes us a little bit more, kind of like a stone in the river with the pressure of the water just over the years and decades and centuries. And now they're beautifully round and polished. I think over time, with age and with experiences, with challenges, we as physicians, as people, as human beings, as parents, as brothers, sisters, daughters, whatever, we become polished and more courageous if we recognize what we just did against all odds and remember it and put it in our memory banks. And when we face that next challenge that is so terrifying and we think, surely this is it, we dig back and go, wait a minute, hold on. And we remind ourselves and just count one by one by one. You know what? That I thought I was surely going to die then, or I was surely going to be fired, or I was surely going to fail, or I did fail. And then I still overcame, and then I didn't fail. And so things that we overcome polishes us and builds us, and we become more courageous as we go. And we have to remind our younger colleagues, look back. Remember what you overcame? Use that as your stepping stone to believe that you can overcome this as well.
Yeah, and I think as physicians, we all go through that to a certain degree just in training, and hopefully that prepares us for when we go out. And I'm reminded of the passage in the book of James where it says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you inquire troubles of various kinds, for you know that by facing those troubles, you develop perseverance. And the writer of James really knew what he was talking about. Yeah. Well, I mean, fairness, he was inspired by God, but but we definitely see that. I can't tell you the number of times between medical school and internship and residency and fellowship that I felt like I wasn't going to make it. I will never forget one of the worst times I've ever felt in my entire life. Was my second day of medical school. We had finished school for the day, or finished classes for the day. I was back in my apartment and I was studying and I was reading embryology. And it took me a half an hour to read one page in this stupid embryology textbook. It took me a half hour to read like two paragraphs because I kept having to look up every other word going, what does this word mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then I fell asleep reading the page and woke up 2.5 hours later. And it's late. And I was like, well, I guess I might as well go to bed. Yeah. And I thought, okay, it took me 2 hours to read two paragraphs.
I'm not going to be able to make it. In front of you. I know.
I was going to say, I can't hack this, obviously. College, I was pretty good at college, but apparently I'm bad at med school. So,
oh my goodness, but you did, and you made it through, and you're here. And so now, when you face new challenges, just go back to that second day and remember that.
Well, and how helpful is it to you now? Because I imagine, just given your position in leadership in your hospital, or in some of the social media groups, or some mm-hmm. of the speaking opportunities that I've seen you have. How valuable is it to you now to have gone through some of these trials so that when someone comes up to you and says, you know, I've been going through this issue and mm-hmm. I just don't know what to do. I don't know if I can make it. How helpful mm-hmm. is it to you to be able to draw on that strength and say, listen, I know what you've been through. I have been through mm-hmm. the fire. Let me show you how to walk through it.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's completely valuable. It is one of the most valuable things. And it doesn't just extend to the medical students that I teach. It also extends to sometimes the patients that I'll see who are going through really bad situations. And I might be suturing up their face and having real conversations about real challenges that I faced as a human being, just like them years ago. And it is very inspiring for patients or students or colleagues just to know that there's no shame in your all-night embryology study. We've all been there, and sort of knowing that you're not the only one, or to explain to someone, you're not the only one that has had to have your face sutured up. There are plenty of professional women that have had this happen to them, and it's not your fault. And here's what you do, and here's how you manage it. There's always shock on their faces when I explain to them that they are not alone. And just like when you were a medical student, and maybe if you met with other colleagues and they said, oh yeah, that embryology, that Krebs cycle, whatever, like, oh, it took me 3 days to figure that one out and memorize it. And there's so much need that we have as human beings to feel understood, that we're not the only ones struggling. And that's what I tapped into when I started the Facebook group, EM Docs. I built it because I needed other people who had walked in the same hallways and the same struggles that I had walked in. And I built it for us to be able to share the joys and challenges of practicing emergency medicine. But I fairly quickly realized that we were not alone in that. And now I understand years later that this is the human condition. We need to all feel that someone else lives our life too. They face the same challenges, and we need to remind each other of the joys too, so we don't give up. You know, like, oh, it was a great save. You know, yes, I lost this, but I gained that. You know, I don't want to get specific about patients, certainly, but there's some real heartbreaking things that we see as physicians, but there's also incredible joy and feeling the honor of being so close to a person that they trust us to tell us their most private information. And so I feel like, to answer the question, though, we all need to feel connected with someone who has walked in our shoes. It's so important.
Well, and who better to have on our side than someone who humbled themselves in the form of a man and came and walked among us 2,000 years ago, that is alive today, that can still guide us at the beginning of every shift, that can get us through those hard conversations, that can stand next to us when we're being yelled at by an administrator, even though we know we're in the right.
Yeah.
I mean, how reassuring, how valuable to have that.
Absolutely.
Well, do you have any favorite Bible verses that are have been a major influence in your life, or are verses that you call on that are really important to you, that are central to your life in some way?
Yeah, so the 23rd Psalm means a lot to me for various reasons, but back in, goodness, I would date myself if I tell you what year it is, but a long, long time ago, in a place far, far away, when I was in fourth grade, my teacher, my homeroom teacher, taught the class the 23rd Psalm. She would certainly get in trouble for that now, but she did. We memorized the 23rd Psalm. And it really stuck with me and resonates with me, and it's still a big part of my life. And I remember later in life, when I was in seventh grade, my parents were divorced and we had moved off the farm, which had been my whole life. My mom moved to a small house in the city, and we were living in poverty, which was a huge change for me because I was used to living on 5,000 acres with plenty. And it was just an immediate switch. But occasionally when I visited my dad, I can remember driving to school with him, and we were going through the 23rd Psalm, just piece by piece, verse by verse. And we talked about each verse. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? And I just remember driving down this muddy, dirt, bumpy road with my dad, talking about each verse of the 23rd Psalm. And so it really stuck in my head. And I don't know, I think what I recite in my head often when I'm walking into a really challenging, as they say, crucial conversation with someone that's really going to be painful, and if I know the person is not necessarily on the same page, understanding where we need to go, I will, as I'm walking down the hall, recite, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." And so that sets my pace as I'm walking down the hall. And then, of course, always, always the Lord's Prayer before my shift.
Yeah, I think that's just so timely for our conversation here. Thinking about, I love the 23rd Psalm. You know, just to kind of piggyback on that, the very next line is, you know, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." So in my interpretation, I always thought of that as the rod being more of a weapon or a prodding sort of a instrument, and the mm-hmm. staff being more of a guiding or shepherding kind of instrument, is recognizing that duality mm-hmm. that our God's guidance is for us is comforting. I mean, it says they comfort me, and
surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life,
and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Amen.
So that's fabulous. We need to just we're just going to start reciting a bunch of Psalms now, because now I'm just inspired. This is fabulous. So Psalm 27 is next, and Psalm 60 is next.
Oh, I don't have them all memorized, just that one.
Oh, that's
fabulous. But it's carried my whole life, so we're good. That's you just wonderful. Need really a few good ones.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. As we wrap up here, I want to ask if you could give one piece of advice to the medical student, the trainee, the physician out there they're struggling with their faith. They're not sure what they believe, or maybe they are, but they're just trying to figure out what's the role for their faith in their career. And they're just not sure. They're struggling with a lot of doubts and confusion. Mm-hmm. What would that advice be?
Well, it's the same advice that I said in my speech when I graduated from residency. Buckle your seatbelt and hold on to your soul. There will be things and people in medicine that will try to turn you into someone that you're not. Hold on, because someone may tell you that you don't look right, or you don't sound right, or you don't have the right name, or the right color hair, or the right height, or whatever. Someone will tell you along the way that you're not right. When you are, and each of us comes with a gift to give, and each of us needs to hold on to our soul, because that gift is within us for a reason, and it is ours to give our patients and our colleagues.
No, that's a good word. Well, Dr. Kay Moody, if anybody wants to connect to you, wants to learn more about the stuff that you're doing, or just keep the conversation going, how can people connect to you?
I guess my email, probably the one that's not as busy and packed and spammed. my personal one, I just get way too much. And so probably, I mean, my personal email is kkmoody@gmail.com, but don't use that one because I'll never see it because there's too much going there. So probably the best email for me would be glacierrockwellnessranch@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, and we'll make sure to put connection links to all the stuff that you've talked about, and let people get an opportunity to hopefully connect to you, and maybe you'll be able to inspire someone else to be the next champion for some physician or some patient in their hospital. So that's fabulous. Well,
I need a replacement. I can't last forever.
Well, she is Dr. K.K. Moody. And Dr. Moody, this has been an absolutely fabulous conversation.
I really think
it's going to be encouraging to folks. I think it's going to be inspiring to folks. And I really hope that it gives people, someone out there, the courage that they need to have that tough conversation, to make the tough decision, to do the right thing, even though it's going to be hard. And I really think that this discussion is going to enable that for someone out there. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. And I hope if anyone hears this and is inspired, please let me know.
One of my favorite movies of all time is called Wall Street. You may be familiar with it. It came out in the late 80s, and it starred Charlie Sheen and Michael Douglas. And in the movie, Charlie Sheen falls prey to Michael Douglas's promise of quick, easy money and fabulous wealth and prestige, and he starts losing himself in all of the wealth and the corruption. And one of his mentors tries to pull him back, and he offers this advice. He says, "Man looks into the abyss. There's nothing staring back at him. In that moment, man finds his character, and that is what keeps him out of the abyss." Well, I hope that this conversation with Dr. Moody inspired you. I mean, talk about strength of character. Standing up to hospital leadership when you know it could cost you your job, your livelihood, even your career, that takes true courage. I think Dr. Moody should be an inspiration to all of us. So let me encourage you, if you're holding back on speaking up about something, I hope you'll take a page from Dr. Moody's book, Lean on God to Give You Courage and Stand Up for What You Know to Be the Right Thing to Do. When you stand with God, you never stand alone. Speaking of standing alone, there's probably a lot of you that feel like maybe you're struggling alone in your career or maybe your personal finances. And if you still feel like you're just not where you need to be, you can lean on support from other people. And I'm certainly happy to help you too. Make sure you take advantage of all the great content on the website about mastering your personal finances and career coaching. And that's all free. But if you want some extra help, some individualized help, I'm available for one-on-one coaching. I've worked with hundreds of families to pay off millions of dollars in debt and build successful careers, and I would love to help you too. So if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at info@thescopeofpractice.com or just click the link in the podcast description. That's info@thescopeofpractice.com or scroll down on your phone and you'll find the link in the podcast description. To further encourage you this week, I have a free resource for you. It's a devotional series called The Body of Christ. You can download it by clicking the link in the podcast description on your phone or on your computer. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. It's a devotional series that I wrote with a medical theme. You know, the scriptures speak of the church as the body of Christ. We see analogies of a person being a hand, meaning they're a healer, or someone else is a mouth and they speak the good news of Jesus to others. Well, that's the idea behind this devotional series. All the devotionals have a medical theme, and I think you're really going to get a lot out of it. This is a 14-day series, and I want to give it to you for free. Again, just click the link in the podcast description or download it from the show notes at www.thescopeofpractice.com/Sunday Special 10. That's Sunday/Sunday Special 10. If you want to contribute to the series and write some of the devotionals, we would love to have you contribute. Authors get full attribution and we'll promote you and link to you. You can email me to get more information by using the link in the podcast description or again at the show notes, which is thescopeofpractice.com/Sunday Special 10. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/Sunday Special 10. Such a great show with Dr. Moody. Hey, before we end, don't forget to reach out to MedEvolve. For those of us who know how hard it is to build and maintain a sustainable business, we understand that bringing the right solutions to achieve our goals is key. So go to www.drpodcastnetwork.com/MedEvolve and get on the path to transparency, automation, and accountability in your revenue cycle. Thank you so much for joining me for the Sunday special today. Remember to go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/Sunday Special 10 to download the free devotional series, The Body of Christ, or you can click the link in the podcast description on your phone. I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow for the continued weekly series of the Scope of Practice podcast and for the next Sunday special on the first Sunday in April. And now, to Him who is able to do immeasurably more than we could possibly imagine, be all glory and honor and praise forever and ever. Amen. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.